All right, everybody. It's July 18th, 2026. Just got to talk to you again. I can't help myself. The kid's on a movie so that I can hopefully record this in one shot. I want to talk about, of course, the Middle East. I want to talk about Canada. I'm going to start today with the fires, and I'm going to talk about the drama surrounding the fires and how I don't understand the lack of consistency. Again, logic trains. If this, then that. For many years now, going back as long as I can remember, to my earliest days of commentating, making social commentary, we're talking 2012, 2013, when climate change was the thing that I most debated. Because for the longest time, I thought the world was going to end because of CO2. I thought it was all over for everybody. Every time there was a hot day, I'm like, it's my fault. It's humanity's fault. And then I really, being who I am, I looked into it. I looked into the science. I read it and realized there's no causal link at all between CO2 and climate. It's just a great way to regulate every living human thing and every living system. Because without CO2, there's nothing. It's the building block of life. Okay, that established, there's always been violent weather. I've spent a lot of time, especially back then, looking at the history of climatic events and realizing that things like in the 1600s, England had several frost-free winters where literally, even at night, they didn't have sub-zero temperatures. Nothing ever froze. And I think to myself, what would we say about that today? And you can go through the course of time. You can look at the medieval warming period. You can look at what happened to Rome, and you can find that climate is always shifting. It's always changing, and that the only constant is change. And then you can get triggered by things like the change in the wording when it comes to reporting these events, talking about how this is abnormal or this is not normal, when in reality, there is no such thing as normal in climate. There is a range. There are averages. And averages are derived by averaging the extremes. So the extremes have always existed. Now, you can argue it's more. You can argue it's less. You can have that debate. But I think it's just a great, big, gigantic waste of time. Because as I said, even when I ran for federal politics, I went to a David Suzuki Center funded debate, and I talked about how climate change is just sucking up all the oxygen in the room. We're not having conversations about real ecological disasters that are ongoing, or the effects of things like monoculture and things like feedlots and things like the pouring of concrete over all of our best wetlands and farmlands to build cities, how the urban heat island effect affects the weather above our heads, great disasters like the one at the Marmoro Mines in Ontario, where there was, at the time, there was all this material that was toxic, this leachate that was getting in the Marmoro River system. Like, nobody was really interested in that, except the audience was. Instead of getting booed out of there for saying that climate change is just overhyped, I got applauded because the biologists and the environmentalists in the room wanted to hear a voice that was talking about something real and not just CO2. At any rate, one of the points that I made is that wildfires happen. Wildfires have always happened. And my fans, my viewers, my people, they applauded when I say those things. When I remind people that the forests, once they reach a certain age of maturity, are always trying to burn. It's what they do. It's what they need to do in order to rejuvenate themselves. They're always trying to burn. And a lot of the times, humans, in our infinite stupidity, have decided that stopping forest fires at all costs is what we have to do instead of controlling them and controlling their nature. And everybody applauded this reminder of this reality, the reality that forests are always trying to burn. Which brings us to today, because now when I say that exact same thing, there are many people in my audience that boo and don't want to hear it. Why? Because of politics. Because in order to support Trump and to support his sanctions and not his sanctions, there is a senator that is trying to get a sanctions bill passed on us for our wildfire smoke. And I'm not going to sit here and defend the Canadian government. I'm not going to defend Doug Ford. I'm not going to say that we couldn't do more to prevent forest fires, to manage our forests better. We've made a lot of stupid decisions. that deliberately exacerbate things. We could be building water bombers. We could be doing all kinds of stuff. Instead, we fund gender clinics in Africa and gender equality nonsense and gender neutral clothing coming out of Vietnam and just absolute retardation that hurts the human condition here in Canada. We mass immigrate. We do all kinds of stupid things. So let's just preface everything I'm going to say with that understanding that we could do more, not just when it comes to forest fires, but when it comes to everything. If there's a way to fuck it up, Canadians will. That's what our government does. Pardon my French. But at the same time, does anybody really understand how big Northern Ontario and the North in general actually is? Like, I want to go to this. At first, I'm going to explain where that square comes from, because a friend of mine, and again, this is all done out of respect, Alberta Leonidas, he says 500,000 acres sprayed with Roundup over 5 years in Ontario. That's a lot of dead forest. Okay. Well, there's roughly 500,000 acres on a map. Now, here's our fires. Okay. And that's just a random box. Here's the fires that are causing the issue this year. Last year, all the fires were up here. Huge amounts of territory were burned, generating a ton of smoke. Now, most of the time when the government sprays, and indeed, I'm just assuming that 500,000 acre number is real. I haven't verified that. I know they do some programs. I think it's a lot smaller, actually, but let's just go with it. Most of the time, they log it, or they controlled burn it, or they do something with it. I'm not saying it's wise. I'm not saying it's a good use of resources. Like, don't put words in my mouth. I'm just saying usually there's a plan when they do it. And instead of it being 500,000 acres in one square, like what you see on the map, it's spread out all over the place. And there's things done with what they spray. Now, we have humans, nihilistic, narcissistic humans, with lighters who think they're activists or just want to see the world burn because they don't know what they've got. They don't know how good we have it in this time. That's another crisis. People not understanding how good we actually have it. For all the complaining we do, for all the commentary, social commentary, all the problems that I highlight, there's never been a better time to be alive in human history, except perhaps 30, 40, 50 years ago. It was definitely better back then than it is now. But overall, it's better than at any time in human history that we know it. Recorded human history, we call it. Might have been better before the Ice Age, but we'll never know. We just know there's pyramids built on every corner of the globe, and they testify to the fact that there was a global civilization. We don't know what it looked like. That's a whole other rabbit hole that we can go down. But the fact is, this is something else that Eric Lavoie highlights. Pulp and paper are down 90%, if not even more, from the 1980s, over 40 years. The industry has completely changed. Now, you might think if the government called back all its money that's sending overseas and it redeployed all of that money into forestry, we might be able to have a handle on this problem. And perhaps we could make a dent in it. But Canada is a massive nation. It's larger than the United States. The United States has plenty of wildfires of its own. If you go to a wildfire map that they published and count the number of states that are on fire right now, it's not just us. It's not just us. They're a smaller nation, and they have 340 million people. They also have the global reserve currency. For now, that's not going to last much longer, which is a topic for another video. But for the time being, they can just print their way out of problems. They have a lot of resources. They have a lot of manpower. And they can manage their forests differently. Okay, Canada's bigger, and we have a tenth of the population. And even if we redeployed all of those resources, we bought water bombers like crazy, we're still going to have forest fires because the forests are trying to burn. You know, and this is a thing too. I'm going to highlight. Kelly Pearson says, the original tweet says, does anyone understand just how big Northern Ontario is? It takes two solid 10-hour days just to drive across it in one little narrow line. Germany would disappear into it. There are few trails, fewer roads, more moose than people. It's also very rugged, practically mountainous over much of it. I mean, anything up by Wawa and Sault Ste. Marie, if you've ever driven it, it's mountains, basically. And the forests are always trying to burn. And it gets dry in the summertime, naturally. And nowadays, we have a decaying society with plenty of Picenti. Once again, I misspelled it because I was on my phone. Trying to do this job from my phone is impossible. I should stay away from it. But I can't help myself. get on sometimes through the day when I just want a little break to do a little bit of work, a break to do work, with ready access to cheap lighters. But generally, lightning, dry conditions, and 60 to 70-year-old pine bush is all you really need. And it's true. Arson's a big part of it, but lightning is still responsible for the lion's share of fires. Pop-up thunderstorms are a menace, man. It's real. I stopped a forest fire 3 years ago. Would have burned the entire place that I lived. A bunch of neighbors, three households, got together. We banded together. And what it was we heard a crack of lightning. And all of us just instinctually knew that that crack of lightning in the dry conditions meant we needed to go and find it. And we all started looking on our own. One household got in their car, just started driving around. Another one was just standing on their porch, scanning the skyline. And I went outside and started walking around looking for it. And eventually, we found it. And the three of us, actually, there was three or four of us. We kept it under control long enough for the fire department to get here. Or we would have lost the whole damn thing because the forest around here is old forest. And when you examine the old forest, all the lower courses of branches are dry. And in dry conditions, and they drop their pine needles on the ground, and it's nice and fluffy to walk on. But all you need is one lightning strike, and up it goes. Silently and very deadly for those who are in it. That's how a forest fire starts. We were lucky. We stopped that one. But last year, we didn't have fires down here, but there were massive fires to the north. We had air quality issues like I've never seen before in my life. I remember one day, the air was perfectly clear. I didn't smell any smoke. But all of a sudden, I noticed the light coming through my windows was yellow. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I looked out all my windows. I couldn't see anything. And so I walk outside, and there is this great big yellow plume disappearing to the north, right over top of my house. And I've got ash raining down on my head. There's nothing up there, folks. There's no conspiracy. There's nothing up there. There was nothing but storms to explain this. And that plume of smoke went over my head, and the air didn't even get dirty till the next day because the heat had driven it so high up into the sky. The ashes were falling on my head. We spent many a day, the family with a cooler of food, driving around as far as we could up north and just parking in farmers' fields, watching the fires burn. And the amazing thing is how many people showed up to do the exact same thing. There was at one point we were in a field with four other carloads of people all watching the same thing spontaneously. We didn't even plan it. It was just like a field party because you can't even fathom the size of these things until you go and look at them. The idea that 20, 30, 40 water bombers are going to be able to control the entire forest in Canada it's just nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Now, rolling the clock back, with a 90% reduction in pulp and paper, there's a lot less commercial resources to manage the forest. It's just left alone. And the government, because they're stupid and they spend stupid amounts of money on stupid things, even if they redeployed all that money, does not have the resources to manage all the forest we have. It's just left to its own devices. And forestry practices, don't get me wrong, we do a lot of things. We pile the brush in great big piles and just basically wait for it to burn. It's pretty wild how careless we are. Don't get me wrong. But the point is, forests are going to burn. And one of the encounters I had a couple of them like this, but the one that I remember signature was this. He was an old timer. He didn't look like an old timer, but he was an old timer. He comes rocking into the field and we get talking and he says, yeah, I remember this happening in, I think he said 1967. He said that was a terrible year. It came through and it burned everything down. And we haven't had a fire like that till today, since then. And I figured the guy had to be in his 80s or 90s. But the idea is a 60, 70-year-old pine forest is at the stage where it starts to try and burn. And that's just kind of how it is. Now, the interesting thing is when we talk about these things, in previous times, like up until Trump made his post, and now all of a sudden everybody's mind changed. All of a sudden forest fires aren't natural. They're completely a product of government. Government can exacerbate the problem. But the people who used to applaud me for reminding people that forests burn and it wasn't a cause of climate change, that the trees need the fire for the seed to germinate and they're constantly trying to renew themselves, people that were applauding me when I was saying that before are now defaming me and calling me names for reminding them of the same thing right now. Why? Politics. Politics. It's pollution. It ruins everybody's ability to reason equally. And like I said, look how much of the United States would disappear into Northern Ontario. Look at our force. Look how great the size of this is. And there's no one in here. The roads end. You have to helicopter in. If you wanted to tackle a forest fire, say, in the Northwest Territories, because, man, there were some gigantic fires over the last couple of years up there. The smoke got blown over Hudson Bay. For some reason, it didn't affect everybody, so nobody paid attention to it because they didn't see it, because it blew somewhere else. There's not even air bases nearby to fuel the planes to get in there to actually fight the fire adequately. Like, sometimes nature is more powerful than our hubris. But the politics of the moment seems to demand that everybody just jump on Carney, jump on the Liberal government, jump on the Ford government. God's forfend that I'm defending them, because I'm not. But it just seems we've really lost the script. There's no consistency between people applauding when I said these things before and turning on me now because I'm saying the same thing. Forest fires are always going to happen. And it doesn't matter. Zachary Tisdale, that brain dead, where is he? He's in here somewhere. He chimed in with, the United States is going to liberate us and save us from the forest fires, or some stupid tweet like that. And it's like, even if the United States comes in and annexes Canada tomorrow morning, they sanction us, they cripple us economically, and they just come in and it's an anschluss, and they create a North American Union, and Canadians gain the benefit of the Constitution, which would be a real upgrade from the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is fake. You don't have any real rights on it. They're all subject to government interpretation. You could argue the United States is in a similar boat, but it's not as bad. I've made videos about that before. I'm not against adopting. If I was given a choice between what we have and what the Americans have, I'm going America all day. I want the Constitution. I want the representation. Sure, they're corrupted. Sure, the Israeli lobby controls pretty much the entire government. Sure, they have their issues, but Canada has worse issues. And at least the Americans have something resembling real, fundamental, God-given rights, whereas Canadians don't have any God-given rights. They all descend from the government, and when the government takes them away and are found to have wrongly done so, nothing happens. No one faces accountability. The Prime Minister goes off, retires, and makes music videos with Katy Perry. Some of the most tasteless, classless nonsense. That guy was running our country. Blows my mind. I just wish... I mean, look at this comment. You can't clean up the underbrush in Canada to control forest fires, but you could invest in firefighting and strategy. Yes, you can. But it's only going to have so much of an impact. We can spend as much money in the world. We don't have the manpower, and we have such massive volumes of forest. Anyway, I wish everybody would just sort of take a step back. I think everybody's overreacting again to the news du jour. Everyone's talking about this. But what they're not talking about is what's happening in the Middle East and how it's going to affect your lives. It's really bad. And if you're watching Fox News or you're just listening to the prognostication of American pundits or the president himself, you're not getting the real story. There's plenty of video out there that shows you just how hard the Iranians are pummeling U.S. assets in the region. Now, the United States can order their satellite companies, or American-based, or the imagery that they publish through CENTCOM, they can blur the images, which is what they're doing, but everybody else is taking pictures. The Americans are not the only ones with birds in the sky these days looking down. The bases are getting pummeled. Qatar's been hit harder than it was in the 40 days, and that's another thing. What are we trying to accomplish here? What are the Americans trying to accomplish? And it's not just them, because this is something I didn't talk about in my last video. Carney has come out and said, he supports the United States in their efforts in Iran. He's on board with it. We might not be contributing troops and planes, but he's given the nod to it. So we're all kind of in this together. We're all going to be eating the sandwich, the bad-tasting, ill-filled sandwich. At any rate, we're all in this together. Qatar's been getting hit really hard. The Jordanians, I watched a video this morning. I haven't had time to go through the plethora of video that we have. And you can say it's all AI. It's not when it's coming from official accounts, when it's being uploaded, live streamed. The Jordanians claim they intercepted all the missiles, but you can see the video of the missiles making impact on U.S. assets. Now, the United States is in the middle of flying back the refueling planes to Ben-Gurion Airport, and some say it's a massive buildup for another aerial campaign. Or maybe, just maybe, the assets the United States has in the region are actually suffering withering damage from the Iranians. You know, they've upgraded their targeting capability. They're now using Chinese intelligence to make pinpoint strikes on the United States, and it doesn't matter how much the Americans cover it up. They're suffering severe damage. They cannot control the Strait of Hormuz, and I worry that there's a shaping operation happening in southern Iran, which is trying to blind them ahead of some type of ground incursion by the United States to try and force a peace, which will not work. This is Iran. This is the nation that sacrificed much to beat the Americans in Iraq, which is what they did. The president the other day, he said the Iranians couldn't even beat the Iraqis. They did. They beat them back and they hung on. Putting keys around 10-year-old boys' necks with headbands that says, "This is my key to heaven," and sending them off to die, and they went. You don't have to like it for it to be true. And I got to tell you, before this war, the Iranians, and even during this war, they have been rational actors. They have been moderate in their response. They have been attacked aggressively. There's no way to frame this as a defensive war in any way, shape, or form. It's on the other side of the planet, and the Iranians have never fired a single missile at the United States. And for those who say, well, the Iranians by proxies have killed all kinds of people in the region, well, the Americans have killed far more. Like, can we just be factual and real? Is that too much to ask? It's not an anti-Trump statement to just highlight history that U.S. foreign policy has killed millions of people in the Middle East just in the last 30 years. It's just a fact. It's just reality. There is no moral superiority to be had here. At any rate, now the Iranians are devastating Kuwaiti infrastructure. They hit the bridge between Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, the one land connection that they have to the world. And there isn't video of government officials driving over the bridge declaring the Iranians hadn't caused damage. In fact, there seems to be a cover-up of the amount of damage. Who knows? I doubt they collapsed the bridge, but certainly seem to have done damage. The Kuwaitis are rationing power. A desalinization plant has happened in Kuwait. The Iranians have given the world enough notice. They've said, look, Kuwait's a lesson. If you keep hitting our bridges and you hit our power infrastructure, we're going to do this to the entire region. And it's so bizarre to me how the world is up in arms. And every single time the Iranians do something, the world condemns them for it. But not a single nation on earth has the courage to condemn what is a war of aggression by the Americans. This disaster, the impending destruction of the purchasing power of your dollars, the price you're going to pay at the pump, the lack of access you're going to have, the disaster when it comes to harvest come fall, all of these things are baked in, all of these things are coming, and there isn't anybody in the world that has the courage to say, you know, the Americans did this. It's the United States and its neocon foreign policy. It's Donald J. Bush that caused this problem. The Hormuz Strait was wide open before the Americans bombed them under a flag of truce. The Iranians, the day they were bombed, were willing to give up all of their enriched uranium and their nuclear program and had agreed for the first time to let American inspectors in to oversee it before the bombs fell. And as Marco Rubio said, the Israelis were going to bomb them anyway, and we figured they'd attack back, so we had to go in and bomb them first. We had to do a preemptive strike because the Israelis were going to preempt, and it was just justification for a war of aggression that didn't need to happen and one that they can't win. They will not win. They can nuke Iran. They will not win. And if they nuke Iran, that's it. The Band-Aid that's been in place for the last 80 years is effectively ripped off, and then God only knows what's going to happen next. Hopefully the aliens that everybody says will disarm all the nuclear weapons, hopefully they're real, because humans are too stupid to actually moderately handle a world where nuclear weapons are just normalized and used. But at any rate, it's just getting dumber over there. And if the Americans try to invade with what limited force they have, they're going to get killed. The weather alone will kill them. It is so hot right now, and it's not getting any better. This is why I said two videos ago, I said I figured it would be tit for tat back and forth until the fall when they went in. They get through the midterms, and this is what they would do. Well, I was wrong. They're going full ham. Now, by the way, it's not even full ham because they were running 250, 300 sorties a day for the 40 days of the war before the ceasefire, the multi-layered ceasefires for ceasefires for ceasefires for ceasefires, which every single one of those ceasefires didn't result in a seizure of fire. We had ceasefires for ceasefires for, like, it's such Orwellian doublespeak. It's hard to hard to maintain composure and not just start cursing and swearing, which is what I really want to do. They hit them so hard in those first 40 days. It didn't collapse the regime. It didn't bring anything down. How many times did we hear Donald Trump say they are militarily defeated, they have no military left? Certainly seems they have lots of military left because the Iranians are hitting back harder today than they were back then. They are militarily effective. They have successfully closed the strait again. They are so effective at closing the strait that Trump has to come up with his blockade. Now, all the blockade is their attempt to take control of Iranian traffic. But Chinese traffic that's going to Iran to load up is still getting through. There's all of these people. Jed, if you're in the audience watching this, bud, you mentioned the other day in a comment why I'm dismissive of Promethean action and their nonsense. It's because it doesn't match the facts. It's narrative fairy tale telling. It covers for Israel is what it does. These are intelligence operations, bro. I don't know how people can't see it. And I think it's because you really need the narrative. Trump needs to be the hero in your eyes. You can't be critical of him. You can't see what's actually happening, even though it's happening right in front of you. I think it was yesterday. 8 ships transited. 7 successfully. They all went through the Iranian side. And they were all down for Asia. The one ship that went through the Omani side, I believe that was the one that hit the mine. So they control the strait. So Trump slaps a blockade on top of that to make it look like the Americans are in control. That's all it is. It's optics. He's trying to convince his base. He's trying to convince the lemmings that he's in control. He's bullshitting. Every single day. And I don't know how people don't know it now. We're at day 140 or whatever we are of the war. The Iranians are raining hell down across the region. All the bombs that the Americans are dropping are not defeating the resolve. And the troops that are going to go into 40-odd degree humid heat to try and capture Karg or to try and capture Keshem or to try and capture Bandar Abbas, the few thousand that can be mustered, are going to be hit with artillery and missiles and drones. And the people themselves, they're not happy with the Americans. They may just spontaneously decide to arm up and go fight as well. This is Persia. This is where empires go to die. That is history. We are not post-historical. And just unilaterally supporting the president, no matter what he does, and pretending that it's real, is not going to save the president. If you've been watching my work, you understand my optimism with this administration. I spoke in favor of it, much of what it wanted to do. And specifically, I spoke in favor of the peace president, the one who wanted to end wars and end forever wars. This is going to become a forever war if the Americans aren't smart enough to walk away. If they send troops in there, and they incur hundreds of casualties, how in the hell does the president walk away at that point? Not even the Democrats will want to leave without avenging those dead. How many months have to go by before you acknowledge a strategic failure? It is terrible, folks. And, for what it's worth, Carney supports it. Maybe not with military, maybe not directly. But he supports the action against Iran. Which always leads me back to this idea of what happened to the elbows? These idiots online, these red party machines, are still talking about their elbows up and how they're going to resist the Americans. And this forest fire thing is just... At a time when the United States is strategically failing, it's an easy target because everybody can see it. It's in the sky. It's like a thunderstorm. It's the same sort of magic they use to convince you that climate change is behind every thunderstorm because it's loud, it's big, it's bright, it's scary. Everybody can see it every time it happens. And if you can convert what people see into fear, if you can convert their perception into a big idea and thus control people, then you can keep them distracted. Wildfire smoke is just that sort of thing. It's everywhere. You can see it. Everybody gets excited about it because it's visceral. It's right in front of their face. And it's a very good distraction to keep everybody occupied and from looking at what's real. It's not just the war. The end of the American dollar is nigh. $1 trillion in interest payments every single year. The Treasury's got to monetize it somehow. The Social Security system is broke by 2029. Medicare and Medicaid are broke by the early, like we're talking 2032 on average. The U.S. dollar is being replaced worldwide by gold holdings at central banks. In the 1990s, the holdings of central banks of U.S. dollars and treasuries were something like 70% of their assets. We're now down around 47%, and it's dropping. It's like that little by little and then a lot. We're at the cliff diving stage. What do you think happens to the United States and its finances? People's savings, people's pensions. Look around the United States. The hollowed out towns, the crumbling infrastructure, the desperate money that's needed to just serve American taxpayers. These are things that the president talked about being important to him. And now the treasure, borrowed treasure, that could be used for the benefit of Americans is being dumped in Iranian mountainsides to no effect whatsoever. It will lead nowhere productive. Trump used to know that. He used to talk about it. I was a hero for amplifying his message. And now I'm a bad guy because I demand that he be consistent with his message. Well, honestly, to hell with all of you who can't see it. I don't care anymore. I haven't ever really cared. I'm not going to cater to an audience of people who are clinging to their ignorance. It's a disaster. 360 degrees. One of the debates is whether or not Canada's in a worse boat than the United States. Canada's dependent on the United States for sure. We have a debt to GDP ratio problem. We have a productivity problem. We have an economic problem. We have collapsing housing prices, which are destroying retirees, and they're starting to wake up to the fact that their retirement is evaporating. People can't get out of things. Insolvencies are up. The other day, I made a post on Twitter about how I found it ironic that an article in the Financial Times, it was the Toronto Star, one of them, and it was about the stunning multiplicative rise in insolvencies in BC was behind a paywall. So if you want to read about insolvencies, you have to pay first. It's wild. This is why for the last several years, I've reduced my expenses, I've reduced my footprints, I've moved deep into the bush, because I've seen this coming for years. And the amazing thing is that there is still time to take action to build a resilient life. C-19 should have been your warning that things were never going to be the same again. Man, do I ever wish we could go back to 2019. Those cottage days when we argued about $34 billion deficits and back before our dollars lost 50% of our purchasing power. I was walking through the grocery store today with the kids and I was explaining that prices don't go up. The purchasing power of your dollar goes down. That's what's responsible for the rising price in some of the products that they buy. And I'm explaining this to them even though it's going over their head right now. They'll remember. Through repetition, I will teach them one way or another that fiat currencies all end the same way. And that the only thing that you can hold on to that is real and tangible and of value are real assets, productive businesses, and things that retain value against the fake money. There's so many problems. And I think forest fires in particular are just the latest distraction from the disaster that is unfolding geopolitically all around us. At any rate, I'm sure there was more I wanted to say, but I haven't looked at the time yet, but I'm sure this video has gone long. And I'll just have to come back at you with more. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.